Mackin. And Lucy concludes her Latin American trip next week at the same time. That's here on BBC Radio 3 next Sunday evening, starting at 10 o'clock.
Belief with Joan Bakewell.
Do you pray? Do you talk to your God? Is your role as a storyteller a highly moral one?
Well, you came to power in the White House as a religious man. What hopes did you have for your time there, and which of them do you believe were realised?
A daily series in which artists, scientists and thinkers talk candidly about what they believe and why.
You are on a journey to improve yourself along moral standards, aren't you?
I would like to improve myself, I would like to improve the world.
The new series begins with a man some have called the Poet Laureate of Medicine, the author and neurologist Oliver Sacks.
For myself, I can only believe in a world of here and now, and I can hardly imagine any other.
Belief on BBC Radio 3. The new series starts Easter Monday at 10:30.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90-93 FM. We're on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. 11 o'clock, Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Dizzy Gillespie's A Night in Tunisia, as performed by his Cuban disciple, collaborator and favourite son, master trumpeter Arturo Sandoval. Stay tuned for an interview and tracks from Arturo's multi-Grammy award-winning album, Dear Diz. Also on today's show, I'm joined by Kevin Legendre for this month's Now's the Time. Kevin, what recent masterpiece have you got for us this month?
We have Charles Lloyd's Canto, which takes us back to 1997, and it is a quite gorgeous album of laments, and it's a great example of how to mix grace, romanticism, and fire, as you can hear on a track like this. This is Durga Durga.
From the serenity of Charles Lloyd to the energy of Gilad Atzmon and his new CD, Songs of the Metropolis. In the notes, Atzmon talks of capturing the sound of a city, recognizing the pulse and spirit. He's spoken about identity and culture through sound. And with his Orient House Ensemble, this is his fusion-oriented impression of Manhattan. Thank you. Manhattan from Gilad Atzmon on soprano sax and the Orient House Ensemble, who are Frank Harrison on piano, Yaron Stavi on bass, and star of that track, Eddie Hick, relishing some conversational and intricate drumming. The new CD, Songs of the Metropolis, is released on the World Village label and full of descriptive compositions executed with great passion by Gilad and the ensemble. And if you want to see Gilad Atzmon's quartet in concert, they're at London's 606 Club on Saturday, March the 30th. International recognition has taken a little time to catch up with what we've known here in Britain regarding vocalist Leanne Carroll. An artist full of richness and authority with whatever she's singing, she reunites with producer James McMillan, with whom she collaborated on her previous big production album, Up and Down. The new album utilizes the tasteful orchestral and big band colors of Los Angeles-based arranger Chris Walden and is actually quite a stripped-down affair with lots of space and patience. Regular collaborator Mark Edwards plays piano on more than a few tracks as she takes on the challenge of an entirely ballad program. Here's an original composition by fellow vocalist Sophie Bancroft. From Ballads, this is Leanne Carroll and Calgary Bay.
Thank you. Calgary Bay, in Calgary Bay, I'll stay.
Leanne Carroll and Calgary Bay from her new album Ballads, which is out in April on the Quiet Money label. And if you want to see Leanne Carroll in the flesh, she's performing with fellow vocalist Ian Shaw on Monday, March the 25th at the Pizza Express Jazz Club in Soho, London. And for all the budding vocalists out there, King's Place hosts the Global Music Foundation London Jazz Workshop and Music Festival, which runs from March the 28th to April the 1st. Alongside these workshops are public concerts from American veterans Bruce Barth and Bobby Watson, and our very own Claire Martin performs on the 29th of March in Hall 1. For more information on the festival and concerts, check the link on the Jazz Lineup webpage. Norwegian saxophonist Marius Neset releases his long-awaited follow-up to Golden Explosion. Yes, there have been collaborative projects in between, and I hope you've been enjoying the music we've broadcast this month of Neset's quartet at Southport's Jazz on a Winter's Weekend. One listener called Martin Hills wrote in to say how much he enjoyed it, so we'd like to dedicate this next composition to him. The new album features the same trio, comprised of the Phrenesis Men, with the added flavour of vibraphonist Jim Hart. The album is called Birds and is released tomorrow. This composition sees Neset drawing from Norwegian folk music for spring dance. The tenor saxophone of Marius Neset and the interweaving flute of sister Ingrid Neset on the quite traditional sounding Spring Dance. This new album reveals Neset as a composer full of ideas, combining a variety of rich influences, demonstrating an admiration for classical, folk and jazz artists, including mentor Django Bates. Marius fashions and sculpts musical images that distinguish him as a musician with a penchant for complexity. The album is called Birds and is descriptive in its luscious sounds, grooves and colours, and it's out tomorrow on the Edition label. An edition label exec Dave Stapleton performs on Thursday, March the 28th, at the Band on the Wall in Manchester. So catch him playing piano and leading his quintet at that magnificent club. That's the Dave Stapleton Quintet at the Band on the Wall in Manchester. I'm Julian Joseph, and this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3, on 90 to 93 FM, online, and on digital radio. And remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. Time for our regular monthly feature with Kevin Legendre, Now's the Time. Why this one, Kevin?
Because it's an album where I think you really get a sense of Charles Lloyd as a great romantic figure, somebody who, although he's a very gifted saxophonist, really is a storyteller, which, as you know, is one of the great values that the jazz musicians who take the art seriously have to uphold. Can you tell a story through the song? And I really think that he's singing on this album. He's a tenor saxophonist who has great lyricism. And I think the way to understand this album is to actually look at the sleeve. There's a picture of Charles Lloyd on the front, a gorgeous picture of him actually looking out to the distance next to a window. So it's quite wistful. You turn it over and on the back you see a picture of Billie Holiday. And that's how I understand the album. Billie is in the room with him. Billie is in the studio with him. Billie is in his heart on this album. So all of the delicacy, all of the vulnerability, all of the grace that you associate with Billie Holiday, it's in this music, it's in his playing, and it's in the compositions.
And it's interesting that you say that Billie was in his heart, because that's who's playing the drums.
Billie Hart. Charles Lloyd actually name-checks him in the sleeve and refers to him as Jabali, which is the name that he had when he was working with Herbie Hancock's famous Mwandishi group. And if you think of the funk that he had during that period, it's actually there in this album as well. We'll hear it a bit later on. But the Billies, the Billie Holiday and Billie Hart, they frame this album, they suffuse this album so strongly. And I think that's why the first time I heard it, it did bring me to tears. There are a few tracks where I thought, he's really pouring his heart out here. And the musicians are so sensitive and so responsive to what he's doing. The whole thing is very sublime.
So we're going to hear How Can I Tell You. What is it that this particular piece tells you?
I interpret the title as, How Can I Tell You I Love You? Or, How Can I Tell You That I Don't Love You Anymore? There's an ambiguity there. I talked about the lament, the quality of lament that I think defines this album. It's really here in this piece. And it has a kind of American songbook ballad feel to it, but also there's an element of Coltrane's Naima in there as well, this very heartfelt love song. And I love the way that about 3 minutes in, after this gentle, very delicate first section, it goes into this slightly broken swing, which is slow and suggestive. Anders Yorman and Billie Hart, they're playing very, very delicately, but nonetheless there's the momentum which is there. And that carries the piece emotionally. It kind of, it picks it up and it moves with it as he becomes, in his soloing, and just the way that he states these different phrases, I think just compelling, absolutely compelling in the way that he plays.
From the album Canto, this is Charles Lloyd's How Can I Tell You?
Thank you.
Charles Lloyd on tenor saxophone and How Can I Tell You? Anders Jormin was playing the bass, Bobo Stenson's on piano, and Billy Hart is on the drums. One of the things that I find quite stunning about Charles Lloyd's playing is that you mentioned Coltrane and reminiscences of Naima. But I'd say that Charles Lloyd plays from a Coltrane conception when he plays a ballad. And so there's always this general sense of the Coltrane approach, obviously manifested and transformed through Charles Lloyd's own personal approach. But that is there. It exists in his general approach to a ballad.
Absolutely. I think, as I mentioned with the Naima reference in particular, there's the sensitive side of Coltrane, as well as the fire as well. And I think he's managed to find his own personal language between those two poles. I mean, the other thing as well, which I think is really important, is that he goes into the deeper history of the tenor saxophone through evoking the presence of Lester Young, who you feel very strongly, which again takes us back to Billie Holiday, where the lightness, the delicacy, and the breath, the use of breath on this album, the kind of hint of the note before the note actually arrives, the anticipation, all of that is very, very strong throughout. I think it gives it an ethereal quality. I think that's the word that I'd use to really sum up some of the high points of this album. It's this kind of movement between the very physical, harder sounds, harder tones, and ethereal, like mist over water. You know, how these sounds just kind of float into being. And the thing that completely knocks me out is that relationship between Billy Hart and Anders Jormin, how the two of them balance the delicate and the dense. So on the next track that we're going to hear, Desolation Sound, which really, I think it's all there in the title. This is haunting. It's utterly haunting. And the way that, as I say, you have this breathy, purring sound on the saxophone, how that kind of just swirls into being. If you listen to the way that Billy Hart, when he gets going, basically has this ultra-delicate approach on the cymbal. So at times it feels as if he's turned the cymbal into these little bells, the bells that you'd associate with the music of Pharoah Sanders and Alice Coltrane, the kind of Eastern chiming sound. Yet what he does as well, which is really clever, is vary his patterns on the tom-tom and vary his attack and volume. So it's almost as if he's coming in and out of focus. At times he's really soft, and then bang, there'll be a longer phrase which is slightly longer, and you'll hear the tom-tom coming at you, and then he'll come back a bit. And it made me think of a really important statement that Amir Questlove Thompson, who's the drummer with the great hip-hop funk band The Roots, said, and that is that the funkiest drummers, the drummers who really groove, sometimes are the lightest drummers. It's not about crashing the kit. It's about the length of stick that you use. It's about the equipment, but it's also about how supple you are and how light you play. And we saw Billy Hart together at that gig with the Cookers last year at Ronnie Scott's. And you can see that he's physically very active and he's right over the kit, yet at the same time, he's not crashing into it. He's got such grace.
Absolutely sensitive,
yeah,
to a fault. And also, there's just such great control.
Yeah. Power is nothing without control.
Indeed. And I think one of the great things to listen out for in Desolation Sound is how the piano sets up the meditative quality.
Sparkles.
That this piece has. This is Desolation Sound. Charles Lloyd, and Desolation Sound from the album Canto. And I'm joined by Kevin Legendre. What a stunning piece of music.
It's absolutely amazing, isn't it? It's the sound of a master musician. I mean, Charles Lloyd is 74 now. You know, the career goes a long way back. It's also the sound of somebody who was born in Memphis, somebody who's part of that whole soul, gospel, blues tradition, who's also engaged with Eastern music in a major way, as you know, as we'll hear explicitly on this next track. But I think that it's the sound of a veteran, somebody who has been on ECM for 23 years. So to put things into context, this album, Canto, came out in 1997. He signed to ECM in 1990. So after recording for Blue Note in the 80s, and he had that period of massive success in the 60s when he was signed to Atlantic, making albums like Forest Flower with Keith Jarrett, Cecil McBee and Jack DeJohnette. And it's worth saying that he's, I think, up there with the Jarretts and the Garbarecks in terms of his stature as an ECM recording artist with a 23-year tenure.
He's one of the major artists.
Absolutely.
And major because of this real insight into the spiritual side of how to deliver music, how to express the inexpressible.
Yeah.
And to do this with, as you said at the top, with grace, poise, style, soulfulness. It's very attractive, and it's not surprising to see why he had such amazing success from the very beginning of his career. As you said, on the next track we're going to hear, he uses the Tibetan oboe.
Yeah. So we talked about Coltrane, and I think when you're talking about Coltrane's history, it's worth mentioning Yusef Lateef as the person who had a great influence on him, turning him onto Eastern music, turning him onto the soprano sax, opening his mind. And I think you hear the presence of Yusef Lateef, obviously, in this track, not only through the Tibetan oboe, because Yusef is one of the great exponents of all these double reed instruments and non-Western reed instruments. So I think anytime you hear a jazz musician pick up one of these instruments, Yusef is always there. But also in that kind of that Eastern, that non-Western, very serpentine approach to music and playing using scales, that's kind of there as well. But I think I mentioned it before, it's worth mentioning it again. I think the presence of Alice Coltrane, if you listen to a piece like Journey in Satchidananda, I think that's very, very strongly implied, certainly in the opening movement of this track as well. So you use the word meditative. It's there. It's about meditation. It's about a certain introspective approach to music where there's stuff which is deep within the soul, and that's being exposed. And that it's very, very powerful.
One of the great things that happens on this record, on a number of tracks, is that there's space. Each instrument's able to start a track and to exist for a while before any of the other instruments come in. So we get this opening with the Tibetan oboe solo. Then we get the bass coming in and the drums, and they bring a color, they swell, they breathe to his sounds. And it's not even until the fourth minute that the piano even comes in.
There you go. So space, I mean, it's probably worth mentioning to put things into the bigger context of the album, that the opening track, Tales of Rumi, is a 17-minute epic. And what you're saying applies to that as well, where you have long passages of several members of the band dropping out. So they're really thinking about space and changing the configuration, how you can appreciate not just each instrument, but combinations of instruments, because you hear instruments differently according to what else is in the sound palette as well. And what I really, really like about this piece, and it refers to some of the other pieces as well, is the way that Anders Jormin, who has a very, very big, very felty sound, it's like a deep tone, almost Charlie Hayden-like, he uses the bass as a cushion. At times, he doesn't play a lot of notes. And that skittering quality that Billy Hart has in his playing, it works really well with that, because it's just above this very, very deep surface, and it really, really works.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for coming and sharing this wonderful album from 1997 of Charles Lloyd. It's been very, very good talking about it and listening to it. And now we're going to listen to Nachiketa's Lament.
Thank you.
Charles Lloyd and Nachiketa's Lament from the album Canto of 1997, ending our Now's the Time session for this month. Lloyd was on tenor, Bobo Stenson piano, Anders Jormin on bass, and Billy Hart on the drums. My thanks to Kevin Legendre. And Charles Lloyd is touring right now in celebration of his 75th birthday, and he plays the Barbican on April the 28th with the quartet and special guest Maria Faranduri. I'm Julian Joseph, and this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3, on 90 to 93 FM, online, and on digital radio. And remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. There are very few musicians who achieve the kind of technical mastery exemplified by our special guest. Born and raised in Cuba, he's acknowledged as a true disciple of the legendary Dizzy Gillespie, with a technical facility, deep understanding, and sheer instrumental prowess to execute music created by this standard bearer for musical innovation and technical virtuosity. A founder member of the groundbreaking Cuban band Irakeri, Sandoval has gone on to forge a remarkably successful and varied career. Since leaving Irakeri in 1981, he's led his own bands, is a featured soloist with many leading symphony orchestras, and appears in collaboration with great artists from a variety of popular genres. His latest album puts him at the center of a big band in celebration and tribute to master musician, mentor, and friend Dizzy Gillespie. Called Dear Diz, Every Day I Think of You, Sandoval just scooped the award for Best Jazz Ensemble Album at the 55th Grammy Awards. I caught up with Arturo a couple of weeks ago, and we'll hear from him after we hear the new album. This is Bebop. Bebop from Arturo Sandoval's new album, Dear Diz. And it is my pleasure to say that he is here with me. Welcome, Arturo Sandoval.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are one of the great trumpet standard bearers and one of the musical icons of today. So it's kind of fitting, actually, that in a sense the torch was passed from Dizzy to you and that you have this great respect and love for Dizzy Gillespie. And you describe your first meeting and your first encounter with Dizzy when he first came to Cuba. Mm-hmm. And just recant for the audience what it was like for you meeting such an important figure in music.
You know, not very often you have an opportunity to meet your hero.
Right.
And I really feel that it was like a gift from God, you know. I felt extremely blessed to meet my hero. Mm-hmm. At that time, fortunately, I couldn't speak any English at all, and it was kind of difficult for me to communicate directly with him. But I was lucky to get a guy who was in the same cruise, because that was the jazz cruise. They was doing a tour from the, you know, around the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And I was a percussionist there in the boat that was playing. He was playing with Stan Getz, which also was in that cruise, Stan Getz, and Air Father Hein as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And that was 77. Mm-hmm. And then that guy was our translator there for the whole day when we met, and I drove him all over the city for the very first time because he never been there before. And that was great because later on we played together, but he was surprised when he saw me because I never told him I was a musician myself. Mm-hmm. And when he saw me with the trumpet, he asked someone, "What? That my driving's do with the trumpet?" And somebody said, "No, he's a trumpet player." He said, "No, he's my driver." And yeah, and that was the beginning of a very, very wonderful relationship. And then the year after, I started to play with him already until he passed away. And I was playing with him for years. And we did several albums together. And that was, you know, as I told you before, it's a gift, you know, from God when you have that opportunity, you know, to be around your hero. And I became a close friend, and I called him Papa, and he called me my son, you know. And I was a beautiful relationship, and I miss him terrible, you know.
I'm sure the spirit, the music, and so important. Well, on Burke's Works, which is the next piece that we're going to hear, you call it Burke's Works a la Mancini because you also feature...
And that was my co-producing idea to call Thy Name, but it's okay because when I start to think about the... Because I produced the record too, and I when I start to think about the treatment of the arrangement, I mention in some moment of the conversation, I mention those kind of sound of a Pink Panther with the alto flute.
Yes.
And then I mentioned that tenor sound, and my co-producing, he said, "You know what? I know that person." Because it happened, my co-producing is the husband of Henry Mancini's daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, so it's connected.
Yes, and he said, "That guy is still alive, and he's a friend of mine." And we're talking about Plas Johnson. He's the guy, the original saxophonist who do the original recording of the Pink Panther soundtrack.
Yeah, well, he's very much alive. It's amazing. I mean, but he's swinging, and the tempo of this piece is really beautiful.
And you know what? He's like 85 years old.
Right.
85 years old. Mm-hmm. He still sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's play it.
Well, let's play it indeed. This is Burke's Works.
Thank you.
my special guest Arturo Sandoval and Burke's works from his new album Dear Diz, featuring the original tenor sound of the Pink Panther, Plas Johnson. Joey DeFrancesco was on organ with the arrangement by pianist Shelley Berg. We're going to finish with your version of A Night in Tunisia. One of the great things about Dizzy Gillespie is that he links up so well in terms of his use of Cuban music and Cuban rhythms and his acknowledgement as... he often would say that Cuba was the future of jazz. He would say that. So the contribution of Dizzy Gillespie to music, to jazz, to music in general, to the culture, what would you say?
Let me tell you, in that case, we must mention a name, Mario Bauza.
Right.
Mario came from Cuba in the 20s to New York, 1920s. And when Dizzy came to New York the very first time, Mario was their man in the city, you know, with the trumpet and all kind of thing. Amongst other things, Mario discovered Ella Fitzgerald. And Mario brought Ella to Chick Webb, where he was a musical director of Chick Webb, the band. And also he was a musical director of Fletcher Henderson, and as well of Cap Calloway.
Right.
That was Mario Bauza. Right. Mario was with that. Unfortunately, Mario, I always say that, I'm never going to get tired to repeat that Mario is one of the most underrated musicians in our music, you know. I mean, in our style of music. Mario Bauza, who was a great musician. And Dizzy introduced me to him when I came to New York the very first time, 1978.
Right.
And Dizzy always talked to me, and he said Mario was like his father when he got to New York the first time. Mario was responsible for the whole thing.
Right.
A few people, you know about that, and nobody talk about that.
Yeah.
But Mario was responsible to bring in Chano Pozzo to New York. Right. Mario went on vacation after the war in 46, 1946. He went on vacation to Cuba, and he met Chano Pozzo, and then he brought Chano with him back to New York. And then he brought, introduced Chano to Dizzy, and he asked Dizzy, he said, hey, this guy is going to start to play with you now, and you're going to do things together. And Dizzy say, oh yeah, okay, Mario, whatever you say.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Chano start to write all those tunes, you know, Cubano B, Cubano Bob, Tintin Deo, Manteca.
Yeah.
All those things, that was Chano's idea.
Right.
And
sure.
It's a documentary, Dizzy talking about the whole thing.
Right.
And that was the very beginning of the whole thing they call Afro-Cuban jazz.
Right.
But that was Mario, Chano Pozzo, and Dizzy. Not necessarily in that order.
Right.
You can put any order you want.
Right.
But those three persons, they really was the really the pioneer of the whole movement, you know, the whole fusion and idea to mix bebop with a Cuban rhythm. Which is this is the essence of the style, you know.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's nothing else. It's only two strong
elements
to put it together correctly.
Yes.
And then we're gonna have fun.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna finish now with A Night in Tunisia, taken from Dear Diz, Every Day I Think About You, featuring Arturo Sandoval. And I just wanna say thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
My thanks to our special guest, Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Arturo Sandoval, and A Night in Tunisia from his new album dedicated to Dizzy Gillespie. Out now on the Concord label, it's called Dear Diz, Every Day I Think of You. I'm Julian Joseph. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3, on 90 to 93 FM, online and on digital radio. And remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. Guitarist Phil Robson first put together the Immeasurable Code Quintet for a tour in 2011 that included American saxophone star Mark Turner. The group were recorded on this tour, and that music became the Immeasurable Code album, released on the Whirlwind label. The recording highlighted the group's strengths and identity and has become one of Robson's most successful bands. Jazz Lineup recorded them at the Jazz Bar in Edinburgh on Wednesday, the 19th of September, 2012, with British saxophonist Julian Arguiles replacing Turner, Gareth Locrane on flutes, Ewan Burton on bass, Ernesto Simpson on the drums, and leader Phil Robson on the guitar. From the Jazz Bar in Edinburgh, this is Phil Robson's Immeasurable Code. Now, you may have heard the broadcast of their first set previously, but they start off their second set with a Robson composition in 3-4 called Berlin. Thank you. Phil Robson's Immeasurable Code Quintet, recorded at the Jazz Bar in Edinburgh on Wednesday, the 19th of September, 2012. And that was Happy Talk. Julian Arguiles was on saxophones, Gareth Locrane on flutes, Ewan Burton on bass, Ernesto Simpson drums, and leader Phil Robson on the guitar. For more details of all tracks played tonight, check out the playlist via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's almost the end of this week's show, but remember, plenty more jazz tomorrow night at 11 on Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson. As part of Baroque Spring on BBC Radio 3, he has a new commission from pianist Alexander Hawkins and his improvising nonette featuring US trumpeter Peter Evans. And on next week's jazz lineup, Kevin Legendre investigates the resurgence of vocal jazz in the UK in the company of writer and broadcaster Bob Sinfield, plus concert music from the Quinton Collins Brandon Allen Quartet. To finish with tonight, pianist Andrew McCormack from his new recording featuring Chris Hill on bass and Troy Miller on the drums. The album is called Live in London, and McCormack is the latest in a list of top young artists joining the Edition Records roster. And you can catch him at the Barbican on April the 13th as he performs as part of the London Symphony Orchestra's LSO Futures Contemporary Chamber Works season, playing the music of friend and collaborator Jason Yard. This is Two Cities. From me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Hello, I'm John Shea, and welcome again to Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. Lieder by Richard Strauss and Mendelssohn's Reformation Symphony are an hour away, but I'm starting today at the 2011 Bodensee Festival. I can't think of any other single festival we feature on this programme that takes place in three different countries, but the reason here is simple. Bodensee is the stretch of water that we know in English as Lake Constance, with shores in Germany, Austria and Switzerland. And our southwest German radio colleagues have been tacking back and forth across the water regularly since the festival started in 1989. The Casal Quartet are our performers today. Schubert's Quintet is in 10 minutes, after Webern's Five Movements, Opus 5.
Thank you.
Doomed to total failure in a deaf world of ignorance and indifference, Webern kept on cutting out his dazzling diamonds, of whose mines he had a perfect knowledge. So said Stravinsky of his contemporary, and those were Webern's five movements, Opus 5, for string quartet. Schubert's great string quintet in C major fills the next 50 minutes. Unlike Mozart, who'd chosen a second viola in his string quintets, Schubert followed Boccherini and opted for a second cello. Joining the Casal quartet here, the cellist Miklós Perenyi.
Thank you.